work with a homosexual is important, partly because we're in a time when we're in our society, when we're attempting to understand the nature of human sexuality. Certainly the homosexual is part of a group of persons that have been maligned, who have been treated a particular way because of a particular sexual identification. Now we're finding out that regardless of what a person's sexual identification is, it really doesn't change very much how they act as humans, unless they are treated in ways that are inhuman. And we should look at the homosexual as a sexual being, first of all, and a homosexual second. But we do need to know what it is that the person who's attracted to members of the same sex is feeling, as well as what they're doing.
In order to understand what homosexuals feel and what problems they face in living in our society, and to dispel some of the myths and misinformation about them, homosexual men and women will share some of their experiences and viewpoints with you.
My name is Stan Cates. I'm a college student and a homosexual. I don't think about being homosexual much. I live in the same world as everyone else does. I go through the same everyday routine, get up, go to class, study, use the library, eat, sleep, do the same things for entertainment, see the same shows, listen to the same sounds. It's just not that different. I think straight people, heterosexuals that is, get their weird ideas about homosexuals from movies and books. For instance, they think all male homosexuals are effeminate hairdressers and lesbians. They picture all of them as husky truck drivers smoking cigars, and these are both really bad stereotypes. They think homosexuals are all in the theater of the arts. That's ridiculous.
My name is David James. I'm an actor. Sure, they're homosexuals in the theater, but they're in every other kind of work, too.
My name is Larry Myers. There's all kinds of occupations that homosexuals find themselves in. I happen to be a factory worker.
I'm Joanne Pekarski, and I'm a physical therapist.
My name is Marilyn Martin. I have worked as a secretary.
My name is Tony Wayne, and I'm a high school teacher here.
My name is Gail King. I am a teacher in the Boston Public School System.
Ron Warren, working for J.C. Penney Company.
Well, my name is Phyllis Lyon, and I work as an administrative assistant for the Glide Foundation.
I'm L. Alvarez. I've worked for lumber yards. I've worked in dairies. I've worked in alfalfa farms. I've worked in orchards.
My name is Diana Travis, and I'm a professional musician and a teacher.
My name is Tom Durr, a graphic artist.
Another thing about these books and movies, they make the homosexual life seem to be very lurid. The bath scene, for example. Some homosexuals never go near the baths or even the bars. But the movies concentrate on the bars, the hustlers, the midnight cowboys. Those are the things that are exploited by the movies. The other angle they take is the tragic, lonely life of the homosexuals. Shunned by everyone, sunken in a state of depression, or somehow always winding up alone, contemplating suicide. It's not like that. At least not for me or any of my gay friends. Actually, it would be very easy for me to keep my homosexual life hidden. And I'm an activist. So what I do is identify myself. I think homosexuals aren't accepted because people don't know what they're really like. That's why I'm doing this interview with you. Once people have a chance to know us and find out that we're really no threat to them, then I think they'll relax and accept us as people very much like themselves.
My name's Susan Day. It's very difficult to get your parents to understand when you are homosexual. So I went through about 3 years of not telling them, and it got very, very tense around home and very awkward. I made up my mind that I had to tell them. I went home for Christmas vacation and I was all set to tell them then. While I was home, though, my father was always Oh, ribbing homosexuals, putting them down. I can remember one time we were watching, television, and he turned and said, "That guy's as queer as a wooden nickel." This sort of thing made me increasingly nervous, and I wasn't able to tell them. So I went back to college without having told them. So I sat down and I typed them a 10-page letter explaining everything. And from there, we went on to an exchange of letters that ended in my father disowning me.
"I find your letter very upsetting. Since you chose to go against the values we have tried to teach you, your mother and I are forced to take the following steps. You no longer have the use of the family car or the telephone, and when you're home from college, you're to be in the house by 10 p.m. In addition, I forbid you to see any of your queer friends again."
By punishing me as you are, you're treating me like a 6-year-old kid who just broke your antique vase, and it's not that sort of situation. I haven't willfully chosen to be gay. That's my disposition, and not, therefore, anything you can punish me for. I hope you'll understand someday.
"You are not homosexual as you seem to think, and you are going to change. I don't care how you do it, but by the time you come home from college in June, I expect you to be changed."
"It's not so easy as you dictate. I'm very happy being homosexual and don't want to change. Since you have to want to before even any slight change in your sexual disposition comes about, I won't be changing."
"Your attitude is abhorrent, and I'm writing you this last letter to tell you that as of this date, I am no longer interested in your affairs, and you may no longer consider me your father."
We went through, from then on, for about the next year or so, a lot of ranting and raving and crying and screaming, and it was a really hard job. The first time I saw my father cry was during one of these times when we were talking about this. It's now been 2 years since I initially wrote to them and told them that I was gay, and it's come around to the point now where they will visit with my gay friends. They no longer feel that there's something I'm hiding from them. They know what I'm doing, and they're happy knowing that at the same time I've maintained the values that they have felt were worthwhile and that they did try to teach us.
"I'm Bob. I'm 32. I'm a teacher from the Midwest."
"I'm Greg. I'm 28, and I'm also a teacher."
"The fact that we can't allow our faces to be seen in this film is frustrating, because we want to be open about our lives, but it points up the problem we face."
"It would mean losing our jobs. It's ridiculous that people believe our sex lives have anything to do with our effectiveness as teachers."
"But they do. A good many people in the general public have the idea that the homosexual is some sort of freak. You're certainly not to be trusted with children. Well, no teacher who is sexually attracted to children or youth should be allowed in the classroom. It really has nothing to do with homosexuality. It's a problem of adult maturity, no matter what the sexual orientation is."
"Another myth about homosexuals is that they are always promiscuous. If it's true, it's mostly because society makes it so hard for homosexuals to live together in a good, stable relationship."
"We don't have the sanctions of law and church on our side. The sorts of things that heterosexuals take for granted. We don't get tax benefits. Insurance is higher. We had to put a lot of time and thought about where we could live. We chose this hill section because it's secluded."
"And that's one of the reasons that we got the dog, for protection. We can't expect the same kind of protection from the police that heterosexuals take for granted. The police are more interested in hassling us about our relationship together than in helping us if we get robbed."
"But in spite of all the problems, many of our friends have been together for years. I think it's just human to want to find one special person to live with. But homosexuals have a much, much harder time working things out to do that."
I've been active in the homophile movement for about 7 or 8 years. And about 4 or 5 years ago, I got the idea to open up a bookshop like this. However, I didn't have any money, so I worked at a summer resort for 2 years and saved up the money and opened the shop. And shortly after that, we started getting threatening phone calls, swastikas written on the door with "kill all fags." And then about a week later, came to work one morning and the shop had been broken into. And the door had been demolished with a sledgehammer or a good hard kick from somebody. It was just vandalism. They didn't take anything. But after that, I realized it was a necessity to get gates to protect us from this happening again, which we did. We don't particularly like having the gates. It looks like a fortress, but it's a matter of survival.
We all tend to talk about the big oppressions that happen to gay people, like being arrested for being gay in a bar or being fired from our jobs. And I'm not denying those, like I think they're really real, but I don't think that the majority of gay people really suffer any of the big oppressions. It's more what I call the subtle oppressions, that the little things that really hurt, like not being able to share your life, your happiness with straight people, even if they really are aware that you're gay. The smaller things, like where I've noticed really being hurt, is, for example, where I work. Like this one girl who's really good friends of mine knows that I'm gay and she's straight and everything. But she still does certain things, like she'll invite me to a party, but she'll fail to invite my lover. Or the office parties, you know, everybody's supposed to bring their husbands and wives, and you just sort of have to come alone. Like, most people where I work, I think, do know I'm gay. And it hasn't, you know, brought anything heavy down on my head, but in the same sense, it's always being uncomfortable, having someone else feel uncomfortable, which is really hard. I guess the example of that sort of communication I'm talking about, it's like your straight friends, like at work, or they call up and you talk to them, the kids back home, and like they're all bubbly about their greatest romance with their new boyfriend. And like if I talk about it, they don't relate to it as meaning as much to me as it does to them, what they do. They just sort of, or, you know, just sort of, well, that's fine. But they really don't understand. And, you know, it's really hard for them to really be able to get at this, that you can feel and love someone of the same sex as much as they do someone of the opposite sex. You sort of have to have your head in a good place. Like, it's really hard just to walk down the street holding hands, even though it's sort of a natural thing.
My name is Ralph Lucas. I work in the office of Kaiser Hospital. There's no real problem, no tension as far as that's concerned. I'm certain they don't really care that much. Well, I have a difficulty, I may be a maverick, adjusting to homosexual life. I would say that is my main problem, relating within the homosexual world. I guess from the moment that I was aware what sex was, I knew that I was completely homosexual. By the time I was 16 or 17, I'd read homosexual literature, and I was not going to have any single relationship until the right man came along. And he didn't come along, and he didn't come along until I was 19, 20, 21, 22, and finally I decided to go to the bars. And I felt that, for me, was a major defeat. I don't like the loud music in the bars. I don't smoke. I don't drink that much. And the whole idea of just wandering from one bar to the next, that is not my idea of fun. But I would like a relationship with people where you could sit and talk with them, exchange ideas, find out what they're like. When I do go to the bars and I see the guys there, they really do not seem happy to me. And I go to the YMCA and see the young straight guys there that are playing volleyball, and this sounds corny enough, but they seem happier to me. They look better and they seem happier. I believe I found a meeting with the homophile movement. It is a movement, it is something outside of myself. I don't wake up each morning saying, who can I meet today? Or what will happen to me today? Me, me, Ralph, Ralph. I wake up and I say, just live your life with pride and dignity and love. And no matter what your sex object is, you'll have a good life.
Well, it's sometimes difficult to even know that there are homophile organizations that exist. There's the initial shock of finding out that you think you're homosexual. And I quick rushed to the school library and did all the reading on the subject that I could, just to find out for my own mental health that there were other people like me and that I was not the only homosexual in the world.
First place you look was in the dictionary, look all of the dirty words like lesbian and homosexual and queer, and then you go to the encyclopedias, which have rather clinical and Greek-oriented things, and beyond that, you don't find much.
Yeah. When I first decided that I might be gay, I did not go to the library. I went to the newsstands. And anything with a title vaguely resembling anything to do with homosexuality, even if it's just a picture on the cover, which often is misleading. I picked it up. The problem with going the bookstand route is the majority of books that are on the stands now are pure trash. Mm-hmm. They're very, very sexually oriented, and they don't really tell you anything that you want to know. Mm-hmm. But they're written for the heterosexual male, mm-hmm. at least from the women's standpoint. Yeah.
And I think it's sad that a lot of kids will go through is this time of searching when there's nobody to turn to. And what I did, I put an ad in the Washington Free Press. And I think it was kind of a bold thing to do, but there are a lot of kids that aren't that bold. Mm-hmm. And I was just very lucky.
Martha warned me against answering the ad, but I thought it was more of a cry for help than anything else.
What?
Gay girl wants lesbian
right.
friends. Oh, jeez.
It seemed like all the doors were closed. I couldn't speak to my family. I couldn't talk to my straight friends for fear that they would be my friends no longer. This paper was really a savior.
The need for fellowship and a social life in a wholesome setting is being recognized by some community organizations and churches. The Church of the Holy Apostle in New York has opened its doors for meetings of homosexuals. The West Side Discussion Group uses the church to hold weekly meetings where the problems of the homosexual lifestyle can be discussed. There is a weekly dance where members can meet friends and socialize. These meetings provide sharp contrast to the commercial atmosphere of the gay bars, but such opportunities remain very scarce for the homosexual. The chance to relax among friends, to lower the mask they often feel compelled to wear in public, is of vital importance to these men and women.
I think one of the primary needs of a homosexual is companionship. There are places that are sort of psyched out in every city where it's known exactly where one could meet someone. And very often one finds one in an atmosphere that's very, very uncomfortable to themselves. You're forced to go into an area on certain streets and parks in order to find people that you're comfortable with. And then, when you're in that field, try to find somebody you're very comfortable with. Well, one aspect of gay life that is unparalleled as far as heterosexual life goes is the recent rise of the baths. Sometimes I will go in just for a swim, spend a very short time there. Other times I will stay there 5-6 hours. And the baths provide a whole new communal way of meeting people in many, many social events, aside from one of the primary functions, of course, which is your sexual opportunities when you're there. When I go, I spend several minutes in the steam room, up in the solarium, on the roof, enjoying the sun and the skyline of New York. There's a buffet, very often, and there's an enormous library, magazines and books. There's a television room. There's self-meditation through yoga, which I've tried myself and found very, very enjoyable and relaxing. And it's great to get, for my own peace of mind. You know when you go there, most of the time, that you're going to find somebody that you will be involved with, purely for satisfaction. It's a carnal thing, and of course a social thing also, but I feel very often that it's a matter of expressing oneself and finding someone to do it with comfortably without forcing yourself upon the outside world in ways that you really don't want to. When I come out of the club, I feel very together again and just able to face outside, rejuvenated.
The basic problem, as I see it with homosexuals in society, is the feeling of rejection, of alienation, fighting with the difference between what you are, what you feel, and what you need, and what society tells you you should be. And there's really no way to fight that except change society, which is a long-term thing. All homosexuals are maybe not nice people, but we're all just people like anybody else. And that's what it all boils down to anyway, is people have to learn to accept one another as people, not as homosexuals or black men or Jews or whatever, but as people.